Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality, and is about discovering your place in this great universe, from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life, and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about being a caregiver. What is it all about? Let's talk about it from various sides: observation and engagement. My guests tonight are George Shannon and Chad Patrick Shannon. They're the co-authors of The Best 7 Years of My Life, The Story of an Unlikely Caregiver, where George was the caregiver and Chad was in observation of being a caregiver for his mother. And we can say, what is it all about? Is it about, oh, I just sit here and do what I can? This is, I've reached my max. I'm kind of maxed out, and maybe we should just have our mother or our father or our brother or sister. Maybe somebody else needs to take care of them. Or how big is the check we can write out because this is just too much for me? I've got other parts of my life to live. Many times people say when a conversation starts with, you know, they are going to need some help, they say, oh, just what does help really mean? I can cook a few lunches, you know. I can bring a fast food home for dinner. That's about as much as I really know how to do. Are we thrown into situations where we have to start to learn more about how to help someone in day-to-day living? How about we also learn about our heart, our soul, our spirit, and just truly what we're made about? And that's really what we'll talk about today is, what are we really made from? What is our core really about? Why are we really here? Are we here to learn about love unconditionally? Are we here to learn about humility? Are we here to learn about giving, caring, and not even worry about all of the other stuff? Well, I did it for you and you did it for me. No. Can you give unconditionally? That's what we'll be learning about today, is the ultimate story of what is life truly all about and how can we walk with grace and honor for all beings. George and Chad, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jeanette. Thank you for having us on the air. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette.
Oh, you're so welcome. Don't you think, George and Chad, that truly we say, what is life all about? And people are looking for these, hey, I've got to have my passion, I've got to have my mission, and it has to be how many letters behind my name, you know, or how many likes I can get on social media, and we wonder, oh dear, when is your wall going to hit? Because that's not what life's about, right?
It's not what life's about at all. And when you have a partner in life, like Carol was my wife, and something happens suddenly, and suddenly is important because everything is going just fine, and then suddenly your life changes, and you don't realize at the moment how much your life has just changed. And have to gather yourself and try to understand what's going on. In my case, we were on vacation, and Carol had a sudden stroke. And she had had a couple of small strokes in previous years, so I understood and recognized the symptoms. And I got her back home to Pittsburgh, and I put her in a hospital. And on the way back, Carol had these big, beautiful blue eyes, and Carol always, for 41 years, deferred to me on every decision. And she was just staring at me on the way back, and she couldn't speak, and she couldn't communicate with me, but she was communicating through the eyes, and her eyes were telling me, George, I know I'm in trouble. I trust you. I trust that you're going to fix this for me. And it was that point on the trip home that I realized that I had to do whatever I could do to make Cheryl's life the best life she could have for the rest of her life. And that's when I decided to do it. I didn't realize the challenge that I was taking on. But it was at that moment I decided to do it. And I moved forward.
Don't you think, George, sometimes when we inevitably fall off the cliff, she had kind of given you many chosen the water, so to speak, with many of her health conditions along the way. And I think sometimes we say, oh, I see them. Oh, they're going to be okay because they said so. And it's almost like, you know, that old, we're going to forage through this no matter what kind of idea. And it's almost like, have you really, it's almost like God sometimes is saying, I kind of gave you a little challenge there. Did you notice it? To open a part of your heart. And you're like, oh, we're good to go. We made it through that one. And you kind of felt like untouched. Do you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it was like, well, I'm going to keep giving you another one and another one. And then all of a sudden it's going to be like, okay, now I'm in trouble. Do you think you had a lot of warning ahead of time? Or do you think that you kind of grew incrementally along so that you could take on the journey when you did have that event?
I did have some warnings. Cheryl had a type 2 diabetes, and she basically disregarded it. She would take her blood sugar test every morning and never tell me what the number was. And I didn't pay enough attention. And apparently it was getting worse and didn't realize it, but she never did much about it. Cheryl was very irreverent about health. She didn't eat properly. She didn't like to exercise. But, you know, it was Cheryl's personality. She just sort of went along with everything. And she deferred to me on everything. And so there were some warnings. I used to say to her, you know, your body's getting older. It's not getting younger. And you're probably in the best shape of your life right now, this day. Tomorrow may be different. So you need to eat better. You need to exercise because things start to go wrong as you get older, and you can't reverse them. It was just comments I used to make along the way for a number of years. And then suddenly she had the stroke. And even after two mini strokes, I don't think much changed. Cheryl just continued to press on the way she always did.
Do you think, though, also it might have brought you into awareness to be more alert? In other words, sometimes people will say, I didn't see it coming. Well, kind of the messages were there and it was coming along the way. So you kind of were in tune because you did notice things. You were able to be observant. And I think sometimes people will say things happen suddenly, but really the event happened suddenly, but really you, in other words, had up your tether lines. You were awake. Your antennas were buzzing. And you had a sense to pay attention. And I think that's probably the greatest gift of all is when right before a crisis is that your antennas are in tune. Don't you think that if they hadn't been, you may not have reacted so quickly. You may not have gotten her the help that she needed. You may not have known inside somewhere what kind of help she did need. Don't you think that that was the greatest gift of maybe a lot of those little steps along the way? They kept you in line, and that helped.
It was. It was, and it did. And I had to learn everything step by step, and I was very much in tune with what the doctors were saying and what Cheryl's condition was. And I researched, and I talked to a lot of medical people, and I learned a lot. I'll give you a wonderful example of what you just pointed out. I suspected that something was wrong, and I had taken Cheryl to her neurologist, and he suggested that that we see a cardiologist, that there may be some issues with her heart, so go see a cardiologist, and we did. And we went to see this lady, and she wanted to do a couple of tests on Cheryl. Chad, what's the word? What you should do the scope on her
yes.
chest.
Endoscope.
No, she.
Did she want to do an echo, or did she want to do
an echo? Yes, thank you. It was I drew a blank there. It was an echo and a cardiogram, electrocardiogram.
Right.
Well, she did the electrocardiogram, but then Medicare would not allow to do both tests in the same day, so she's scheduled to come back in 2 weeks to do the echo. I'm sorry, I had it backwards. She did the echo and not the electrocardiogram. So we scheduled to come back in 2 weeks, and before we left the office, the doctor said to me, George, she said, I want to give you some insight into what the possibilities are. If Carol is having heart problems, it will manifest itself in ways different than it does in men. Don't necessarily look for chest pains or pains in the arm. It's just something different that's going on that could indicate that there's a problem with their heart. So if anything really unusual starts to happen, then be prepared because it could be a malfunction of the heart. The very next day, the very next evening, we were out and we were heading home. I said, Carol was tired. And I said, Carol, I don't think we should stay out for dinner. Let's just go home and get you something at home. But being diabetic, I thought maybe I should give her a little something. So I pulled into a fast food chain and got her a chicken sandwich and a Diet Coke, and she never refuses Diet Cokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I handed it to her, and she wasn't touching them. And I said to her, what's wrong? Why aren't you eating the sandwich or drinking the Coke? She said, I'm having trouble breathing. Well, I immediately flashed back to my conversation the day before with Dr. Ishmael, and I just immediately headed right to the hospital in the emergency room, and she was having a heart attack. And so the signs were there. I would not have recognized them probably had I not been at the cardiologist the day before. And,
right.
And so for the grace of God, we were there, and she did, a chemical stress test was the second test they were going to give her. And the doctor told me later that the chemical stress test may have killed her. She may have died doing that. And so we were also fortunate that we didn't have that stress test. So there was a lot of good fortune in that visit. And Carol lived a couple of years beyond that, which we were thankful and grateful to have that time.
And I think that's so important, too, is to understand that every moment we have a choice of a different shift in the perspective. Just as you said, if you hadn't paid attention at the heart doctor and you might have been in we're going to get this done kind of idea, or, oh, no, you know, here's the list, 1, 2, 3, we must check it off till the end of the day. I know a lot of times people say, this is how I ran my business, this is how I used to be, this is how we're going to do it. And they take such, they believe the control at all costs is exactly how they're going to run through a condition. I think sometimes it'll take you to your knees when you have a health issue or when you have something that happens and you say, you know, I have no control here, but I am here to be a participant and to do the best I can. Don't you think the word control, if you really hold on to that bag, you're really kind of in serious trouble. If you kind of let it go to the side and say, you know what, I'm doing the best I can with your heart and soul, you might have a different journey, yes?
Yes. The way it happened for me is I was always in control. Carol always deferred to me. She was a very unassuming and humble person. No matter what I wanted to do, I did it. And because of that relationship, I started taking advantage of Carol and didn't realize I was doing that. And so when she lost control of her life, I had to get control of that for her. But the hardest part that I had to learn is to give up control of my life. In the beginning, I was doing things for Carol, but regretting what I was losing out on, a golf game,
right,
a few drinks with my friends. And so it was really not all about Carol. It was all about me. And when I realized that and started to think differently and gave up control of my life and totally dedicated myself to Carol's life, I adopted humility, and it found me. And when I found humility, it changed everything in my relationship with Carol. It opened up my heart. It opened up my soul. And you could just feel the connection between the two of us was immediate and deep. And I fell madly in love with her all over again because I found humility. But it was all because I realized that she had no control over her own life. She was dependent upon everybody else around her to take care of her. And I decided to do that. And I'm happy I took the path. Chad talks in the book about how I was sort of lost in the force and had to make a decision on the first day of this event. And I could sit down and wait for help, or I could find my way out. And there's a quote in the book by Robert Frost that says the way out is through it. And that's what I chose to do. I chose to find the good. I chose to realize that life, you have to accept life on its own terms. And there are things that happen in life that you can't control. You don't choose those things. But what you do choose is your response to those events. And I chose to find the good. And it took me down a path of love and humility. It transformed who I was. And I am so grateful for that. And that's why the book is called The Best 7 Years of My Life, because it's true. The relationship that Carol and I developed through all these medical challenges provided us the best 7 years of our married life.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
You know, and I also think, and don't you think also, too, maybe, Chad, you could talk about this, is that your father didn't become the victim. He didn't become the one that had to co-suffer. He didn't be the one, he wasn't the one who took on it on as, you know, a martyr. A lot of times men will say, oh, my gosh, I don't know how to do this. This is a woman's job. I don't know how to do this. This is not meant up for me. I'm not going to do this. This is not in my legacy. This is not going to happen. Don't you think that your father, just by making one decision in one moment, actually decided to avert that path and to create his own, yes?
Yes. Interesting. I thought that the last question was something that I had an observation on, and it equally applies to this question, which is, there was a little bit of an early struggle as to the control thing. I think that what my dad was talking about was more on a relationship level, but with his own personal struggle was that he had made a life, a career, a family out of, you know, being a sort of type A person, going after what he wants, and maintaining an organized life to do so. And so at first it was a bit of a struggle, and I watched him struggle with the sort of randomness and unpredictability of healthcare issues and my mom's health situation overall. And it was when he realized that in order to really get there, in order to really find where he wanted to be, he needed to let go of all of that. And that's where the transition from my perspective came in, when he recognized that every day might not be the same. Every day may be different, and that includes her health, her awareness, her fatigue, all these things that were variables which normally would have taxed him did not, and that was because he had found that humility he was talking about. He had found that and giving himself over to my mother, that would be best for the entire relationship. And so, yes, in that moment, he made that decision to not be a martyr. And he never once in all those years ever felt, you know, I never felt that victimhood. I never felt that martyrdom or, the truth is, you know, the times the worst thing that would happen to him was he would just get exhausted. But even then, he really refused to complain. He'd often refuse to accept that as a byproduct of being such a loving, caregiving person, and just, you know, maybe blamed himself for something. But he never sought that sort of attention from anybody.
I think it's interesting in the beginning of the book, George, you had written, it says, I've always read this as an unwillingness on her part to be a full partner in our marriage. This made me feel alone. And I think right there in the beginning of the book, it was about you. You know what I mean? You were looking at life as, no, this is, you know, I've got my life and how do you fit into my life? And here all along, maybe she was a silent partner and she was waiting for the messages for what you would learn about your life, and they would show up at a certain time. In other words, sometimes we have people and we say, do we have to have a full engaged life all the time, you know, all the way through all of our decades, and we have to know everything about everybody, and we have to be, you know, this new millennial kind of thing where they're saying, I understand them, I engage with them, I understand all their emotions, blah, 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 and, you know, walk hand in hand into the glory rainbow. And that's not really what life is about. Sometimes it is about one person having their life experiences and the others waiting on the side. And then another time it is the other that might need some help and engagement. I think that is part of the creativeness of life versus saying, here is the linear life. Go play out your template and check off the boxes as you go through it. Don't you think that's exactly what happened here?
I do. It's no matter from the very beginning, no matter what I wanted to do, I did it. And Carol went along with it. We moved from Pittsburgh to Minnesota to Ohio to Massachusetts. And I just decided that when I had these job transfers, that's what I was going to do. And I'd go home and tell Carol about it, but I wouldn't ask her. And she just went along with everything. When we, and through our married life, social engagements, I would instigate. I would make sure that they happen. I would suggest cocktail parties and things. And so as a result, I start trying to change Carol. I wanted her to be a more active partner. I would say to her, I don't feel like I have a partner in this relationship. I have a wife, but I don't have a partner. And she would just look at me and not say much, and I don't know what she was thinking, but she never would really respond much. And so that's why I was always trying to change her, because I wanted her to become something that she wasn't. And the ironic event is that the strokes, and I'm not a medical person, but I like to refer to it as, it sort of took the filter out of Carol's brain. And the strokes, the personality became what I was trying to change her to all along. And it's funny how it happened. And she became a very hilarious person. She would push back against me. She would argue with me. She would tease me. She would joke with me. And I thought to myself, wow, this is the person I wanted all along. And it took a stroke to make it happen. And Chad pointed out to me, because through the process of writing this book, you can imagine that he and I sat and talked for hours upon hours upon hours about all these events. And he was the first one to point out to me that all along I thought I was taking Carol on this journey, but in reality she was taking me on a journey. She was the one that was changing me. I wasn't changing her. She dug her heels in and said, I'm a good person. I don't need to be changed. But she changed me, and when that happened, that's when we became madly in love again all over.
And it's truly about what we think we need or what we are expecting or commanding of our life is sometimes an outside thing. In other words, she may needed to be caretaken, you know, and she was in one way before her stroke, and she was in a different way after her stroke. So in other words, to be taken care of was really important in this time in her life. And pretty much for yours, it was you go out and explore, you know, how you can create the life you want, and then you can turn around and say after the stroke, you're now going to create a different life that you can, it's just something that you can learn that life has so many different petals on the flower, as we say. There's so much more to life and to really engage in it. And don't you think also too, Chad, as you sit back and observe and engage with your father and mother at this time, you too have learned about many of the petals of the flower. In other words, you cannot be untouched by being engaged in it. When you're engaged, when you see it, and it's sort of like it draws you in and you just have to melt and open up. Your heart has to open at one point, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think you put it so nicely earlier. I think you have a really nice perspective on life. And the thing that you said earlier about the waiting for the signals, I think that's what happened there. I think my mom was waiting for these signals to from my father that engaged her love receptors, you know. And
right.
She just sort of responded to the attention, he became softer in his approach to her. Not that he was in any way mean or anything, but he was, go-getter. So he was, you know, he talked to her differently. He held her hand in a different way. He talked to her, he goofed around with her like I've never seen before, you know. And so what that taught me, not too long ago, my wife broke her dominant hand wrist, actually on my birthday. After we were coming back from dinner, she tripped in a garage. But she needed help right off the bat from that night and for the next 6 weeks. And I just automatically knew how to handle the situation at being helpful, at being caring about, you know, all the things that you need to do to care give for somebody. I had experienced it through my mother and father's situation. So I think it directly impacted me and you know, also lessons in love as well.
But also, too, just as you said that, Chad, immediately in my head, I got this vision that your mother's trying to tell you, I'm going to teach you about control real early, so here you go, you know? In other words, right. It's sort of like the dominant hand, you know, it's sort of like, is like, you know when you always grab the stick or the sword or the shield and you're always putting it up and holding it out? Well, immediately we're saying, whoop, can't do that. You got to let her in yourself in now. Don't wait till later till something happens. Don't you think that was an absolute metaphor for you to like, ding dong, I'm here. Here's what's going to happen, and you're going to get it now, yes?
You know, I never quite thought about it like that, but as you say that, it just sort of opens up my brain to and my soul to that thought that, you know, all along it was, you know, her lesson in life, because I always complained that she was always sort of like quiet and didn't give a lot of direct advice, but later in life she did just lead by example, and I think you nailed that.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes, as I said in the beginning of this call, is that when we look at these little messages that have come along, or these little windows of opportunity or windows into our soul, it's really important to pay attention. And I think it's super important, George, when you said that about looking into her eyes, and you could say about her eyes, because the eyes are the window to the soul. So you already knew. Okay, now it's time, you know, now I need to nurture the soul, I need to care for the soul, and that's what you were doing, but along came her along with it, do you know what I mean? So it's sort of like, was she just this outer shell of a being, or was I really connecting and caring for her soul? And I think what you did was care for her soul, yes?
I did. I care for her soul. And I think for all those that will be listening that are caregivers, I think a very important point is that people like Carol, these patients, they feel all alone. And the most important thing to make is to help them understand that they're not alone and that you can care for the body, but you also have to care for the soul. When when people have a stroke, like Carol did, she lost her independence. She never had a private moment for the rest of her life because we had to care for her all the time, and we had to make sure that she didn't make bad decisions because she would fall frequently if she got up and started to walk on her own. So people lose their independence. They lose all their friends. There's no phone calls anymore. There's no texting. There's no going out with the girls anymore. They lose their ability to care for themselves. They have to be bathed. They have all their bodily needs need to be taken care of for them. So they lose all their independence. They lose their privacy, and they start to feel isolated because they've lost their friends, they've lost their independence. And so Carol and I made a very conscious decision to become very public. We did not allow Carol's condition. We didn't hide. We went out in public constantly. We went to church. We went to shops together. We went to dinner together. And we tried to live our life as normal as possible. My goal was to make every day of Carol's life the best day of her life. I didn't know how many more she would have. But the most important thing that I discovered is to make sure that she didn't feel alone. And with the help of my sons, I have three sons, and one, Chad, is in Pittsburgh with me. He was there constantly, and he also helped in that regard to make sure that she didn't feel alone. Chad would relieve me every once in a while. He'd come and spend the weekend so I could go away. Or he would come over and go to dinner with us and spend the night. And so she always felt love from her family. Love and humility just goes a long way when you're a caregiver, because you have to understand what they're thinking, not what you're thinking, but what are they thinking? Carol would say to me all the time, she would tap me on the shoulder and say, "Thank you for everything you do for me." Well, those words today mean so much to me. I didn't pay enough attention to them in those times, but in my reflection on whether I had done enough to take care of Carol, Chad and his brothers have reminded me of that. She's always tapped you on the shoulder and say, "Thank you for everything you do for me." Or she would say, "You're too good to me." Well, those were just words then. Today they mean a lot to me. I remember them clearly. And they mean a lot to me. And it's confirmation to me as I'm coming out of the other end of this this grief. It's confirmation to me that I did do enough, that I did help her a lot. You can always do more. But I feel like, you don't, when you're in a situation like this, you don't get do-overs. You gotta do what's in your heart at first, because there's no second chances. And I'm so fortunate that I found the right path.
I think it's so vitally important also, and we say it so much on this radio show, as I work so much with end-of-life clients, is it's about being in the present moment. And it's important to understand that life is not a lifetime like humans exist. They say, "Oh, but I've lived 50 years or 60 years or 100 years. A lifetime is a split second. It's a split moment. And it's not really about all of that other stuff that we create as humans as our life. We say, "Well, we did this and we used to do that, and oh, now we can't do this or we can't do that." That's our outside existence. When you sit down and you can put your hand on someone's hand and you can look into their eyes and you can just feel and engage in their energy, that is the only moment that truly matters. And that is the only moment that is important. All of that other stuff is just stuff that humans have created to call a lifetime. What you just did with your hand and engaging into their energy is when two souls connect. So what is the purpose of our lifetime anyway? Is it to have that moment when we can actually engage in the soul before our time is up? Perhaps I think that's the best moment. versus saying all of this other stuff and, oh, look at what we did or where we accomplished or where we got and all that other. That means absolutely nothing in the bigger realm of things, don't you think? And I think I'd ask a response from both of you. That would be wonderful.
All right, I'll go first, Jen. There's a quote in the back of the book. I have a lady friend in my hometown that was out running one day, and I was walking. And she's a very spiritual person. And she started walking with me, and I said that she started about God being in my life. But I said, well, excuse me, I'm sorry. I don't see God anywhere trying to help me. I mean, I got all these unrelenting challenges, and I don't see God helping me. She said, George, you're looking in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you're looking for God. God is not somewhere where you can see him. He is inside you. He is with you so you can help Carol. And that was, that really opened my eyes. I went home that day, and I was cleaning out my file drawer. I saw a little piece of paper hanging, and I pulled it out of my file drawer. And it was a copy of an article in the Wall Street Journal a few years earlier that my brother had sent to me about the presence of God, where he is in your life. And then that night I said to Carol, you want to watch a movie? And I popped the movie on I never heard about. And it was about the presence of God in my life. And I went, wow, this is three times today. Somebody is sending me a message. And so it's a pursuit I'm on right now, Dr. Jeanette, is to find out what the purpose of my life has been. Was that the purpose of my life? Or is that something that's taking me down another path? Many people say to me today, God has a plan for you. I've not been that much of a spiritual person, but I'm reading about it and listening, and people are convinced that God has a plan for me. Being on this radio show, being interviewed, just the different articles that appear, the excitement that this book has created in our community. What is God's plan for me? What is my purpose in life? I'm trying to figure that out. And maybe my purpose in life is to be able to share this story with people that go through what I've gone through, and maybe it helps them. That's what I think the purpose is. But I'm continuing to tell the story and share the story and hope that people learn from it.
I think, George, really what the purpose in life is to understand and feel God in your heart and soul, and you did that, and then to go out and share it through the story of how others can connect. I think that's truly the most important, and I think you've grasped that through your book. And I think that, Chad, also, too, in your observation of this, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, so that added statement makes me think about something else, and then I'll share my thoughts on being in the moment. But that is, you know, even though the story was featured in the New York Times recently, the book and the story was featured in the New York Times, my dad got a big thrill about that. But he gets an even bigger thrill when somebody, like a gentleman we're going to talk to later today, gets hold of the book and relates to the book and wants to reach out and talk to him about it. It means so much to him that somebody relates to it and that he can share his story. And so I do believe what you're saying is that's his way of kind of connecting with his soul. And and being in the moment is something I'm very big on. I've done a lot of the reading, Eckhart Tolle and Power of Now and those kind of things. And I just recently had an experience with my wife. We were driving back to Clark Summit to visit her family. And it was a beautiful day. And if you travel out the way we go, there's a stretch that just has these wonderful trees. And it's beautiful and it's bucolic and, just very rustic looking. And so the sun was shining through the windshield. We had my favorite band on. We had just gotten done with a conversation, and I just had this amazingly warm feeling of happiness with my wife in that moment, and I shared it with her. It meant all the world to her that I shared it with her, but it was just being in the moment and feeling what the potential for that, that's like moment of love can feel like a lifetime. I totally get what you're saying about that. It just, it was one for the ages, and it's I can still picture every moment of that. So I think it's such an important thing, and it's hard to achieve at times, but if we can live in the moment, I feel like we can get the most out of it all. So, and to tie that back to what I was saying about my dad, I think that that was the biggest struggle for him, and he'll tell you his entire life, that he was constantly beset by these demons in his head of way things should be and how he must get things done and things must be organized or what have you. And that the experience with my mother pulled him out of that and pulled him into the moment, and he just found the joy in that experience and tries to live it to this day.
I think to be able to say I'm a vulnerable soul is the number one key that opens the door. And once we're able to say, I no longer have to hold up the shield, I no longer have to be as I believed I have existed, or I'm willing to let it all go just for unconditional love and the one moment that I can have in that, show me what it is. That truly was a message in a way that maybe, George, you and your wife were actually saying to God, is that I'm looking for that moment. And you both found it, and you were lucky to find it, because many times people say, my armor is too thick. I'm not willing to do that. That's just, they put up all kinds of reasons and excuses, and they defend what they believed instead of being open to the possibility that there could be something so much better in life. Yes?
When Chad always wanted me to write a book, and my background is sales and marketing, and it's not something I, in fact, can contribute to the world and nothing new. And so 5 years into this journey, I said to Chad, I think we have something we can write now, Chad. We can write about being a caregiver, and we can write about everything I've learned about the medical profession, about hospitals and rehab centers and insurance companies. And he said, okay, great. So they came over and interviewed me, and he, a few weeks later, he went back and he wrote the first chapter and he sent it to me. And when I finished the chapter, I started crying.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got my composure, I called him. I said, Chad, what are you doing here? This is not a do-it-yourself caregiver book. He said, Dad, this is a love story. I've seen it, the part of it, and it's a story that needs to be told. And so, to your point, that's when he and I sat down and talked, and I said, okay, if we want to get down this path and write this story, I'm going to be very vulnerable, because if you're not vulnerable, you're not honest.
Right.
And I said, Chad, are you prepared to hear things about your father that might make you feel uncomfortable? And he said, yes, I am. And to Chad's credit, through this whole story, he's learned a lot about who I was and what I've become and what his relationship was with his mother. And he never judged me. He never got mad at me. He never got angry with me. He never judged me. He did nothing but support me and make me feel okay about everything. And so the experience of writing this book has been a wonderful, wonderful experience. But it's multiplied many times over the fact that we wrote it together. My son, and his mother would be so proud, because I've also told Chad, he's got his mother's DNA. He's much more outgoing than she was, but he thinks the way she thinks. He thinks about the goodness of people. And when Chad walks in a room, he'll talk to you all night long. Not about him. He'll talk to you about you. And that's what Carol was like. So, on a lot of different levels, writing this book and telling this story has been an awesome journey. I had a pastor come to me and say, after he read the book, you've already changed my life. I finished your book last night. I sat with my wife for 2 hours and talked about how we're going to change our relationship. And I want to thank you for sharing the story with me. So that's the kind of gratification I'm getting out of this story. Why did it happen? I don't know. What are we going to gain from this? I think everybody gets a little bit of something different out of it. But back to your point, Dr. Jeanette, there's a purpose in life, And maybe this story being told helps people find their purpose. I hope so.
Well, I think there is a huge marker, and in closing, I would say this. I think that you both have created what I call the ripple effect. I name my newsletter the ripple effect. It's about being able to speak up, to be engaged, to be present in the moment, and saying, how can I see things going forward and how I'm sharing with others? In other words, even in our pain, we can share our pain. We can share our love. We can share our awareness. And it's about the idea of being vulnerable and being open and being able to just let it be, like put it all out there. And that's what's so vitally important in this, what I call the name of the game of life. And really, and you say in your book at the end, it says, you know, all my life I've been in search of peace. What is a peace? Is it a human quality? Or is it a soul engagement? And I think it's a soul engagement. If you can find peace, that's a soul thing. That's not a human thing. That's not, hey, I can put it down on a piece of paper and I could check it off on my to-do list. It's a soul thing. And you both have all have found that. And I think that's so vitally important. But even so, once you find it, you can't contain it. It's something like the sunshine. You can't contain it. Once you know that the sun is really bright and warm, do you think you always go out and find it? Every day we get up. Is the sun out? Is it warm outside? You can't. It's like it draws you in. So once you do get that sense of peace with the soul engagement, you will seek that out like nobody's business, and you will share with others how what it feels like and how to find it. And I think that's what your book is all about. Yes?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, you said that so beautifully. Thank you for that.
Gosh. Oh, you're so welcome. Listen, I think it was such a great time to speak with you both today because I think a man telling a story of being a caregiver is very important. I think also to how to help others, guide them along their path is important, but also too to say, you know what, I'm not a wuss. I'm just a person who says, you know what, there's something greater in this world. And that's what I'm really looking at connecting with. How can I become something stronger, something so vital and so engaging in life? And that's what I want to be. And it's not about being a big, powerful, successful person. It's about how my inner soul can be strengthened. So I think that a lot of times men have been sometimes a little bit disconnected from that. And sometimes the men have liked to run from it because it was easier. And they believed if it was easier to run from it, well, hey, then it wasn't a challenge in the first place. You know, they always like those challenges. Well, sometimes the challenge is to sit still and say, how can I find true love in this life? And I thank you for both writing this book. Again, it was such a pleasure to speak with you both today.
Well, thank you, Justin, for having us on.
Thank you.
Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you, George and Chad? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, best7years.com is our website. There are short video clips on there, different interviews. There's reviews, and there's a source where you can buy the book. The book is available on Amazon, and it's a hardback, paperback, or an ebook, and it's best7years.com, and you can spell out seven and use the number seven. It will connect with our website, and there's information there to reach out to Chad and myself if you want us to do have another talk or an interview or a presentation somewhere. Just contact us through that website.
I have a personal website. I'm also a writer, a filmmaker, and an attorney. So my website is called CPS. That's my initials, CPS, storymatters.com, in that stories do matter. So CPS, storymatters.com.
Well, I thank you both for joining us today because I think it's so important to always share our stories and to be able to say, I lived through it, and I'm really willing to help others. And thank you so much for that journey.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for having us. It was a wonderful talking to you today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about George Shannon and Chad Patrick Shannon, the book, again, is The Best 7 Years of My Life, The Story of an Unlikely Caregiver. Please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to the websites for more information. And it truly is about being able to say, can we be engaged in the moment we're in? Can we say, it's going to be okay? Can we say, I'm truly looking for love, peace, and honor and stability in my life? And how can I be open to people around me and help others? Isn't that really the purpose we're here? Is really to help others unconditionally. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.